Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to the Blog Talk Radio Homeopathy World Community Show. This is Wednesday, November 14th, 2012. I'm your host, Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. We are going to be talking and schmoozing and chatting, and I may be talking to myself. I did not post a whole bunch of announcements about this regularly scheduled show, and Dr. Otto is out doing his celebrations for Happy Diwali Day to everyone. I thought I would just share with you many, many thoughts, and we could do a little bit of studying about homeopathy, things that come across my desk. And I would love to see you just come on over and get on the chat, call up. There is a number for you to call, and that is 347-945-6956. If you are, and you can also click in by using Skype. So to get started, I thought I would tell you that today is, there's actually a couple of things going on this week, and one of them is about happy anniversary. This is, we're going to have a celebration for Antibiotic Awareness Week 2012, something I've never heard about before. I don't know how long that has been in existence, or it is just something completely new to create this wave of awareness about antibiotics. It's running from November 12th through the 18th. It is a global health campaign that encourages everyone to learn about antibiotic-resistant superbugs. And that is increasing in all aspects of our health, depending upon how we interact with our environment, what we do to create a form of sanitation in our lives, especially, you know, you want to wash your hands thoroughly before you're eating a meal and putting things in your mouth, or just with plain soap and water, or if you are in a hospital where there are a lot of bugs going around, or if you're in a place with someone who is contagious. So we want to be able to use antibiotics in a very emergency situation when they can be used and be effective. But if they cannot be effective, then it is useless and we are only weakening our body and we are building up the resistance and strength of those germs out there. This week is supported by the Australian Commission for Safety and Quality in Healthcare, the Australian Society of Antimicrobials, NPS MedicineWise, and the Australian Society for Infectious Disease. And it makes sense that Australians are promoting this education because they are among the highest antibiotic users in the world, around 19 million prescriptions 4 antibiotics are given out each year. And now we understand why we have such high resistance, because we use it for every little thing, although we are starting to learn, and the medical world is starting to tell their practitioners, the physicians out there, the pediatricians especially, not to give an antibiotic for every cough and sniffle. They ask for this pledge: don't rely on antibiotics to treat colds and flu. Only take antibiotics as prescribed and practice good hygiene to prevent the spread of disease. The NPS hopes to save 35,000 Australians. Have all of these 35,000 Australians make this type of a pledge. And if it's going worldwide, all of us can just let other people know about this specific week in the year and get the word out. So that is a point of information. And I'm going to be checking in on the chat. Hello, guest. I would love to talk to you, to say hello, to know where you're calling in from or where you heard about today's show. This is going to be a general schmooze with Debbie. We're going to talk about whole bunches of fun things and things that we find, you know, as we're passing on the internet, on Facebook, on Twitter. There's lots of wonderful things that we can learn. And I posted a beautiful meditation aphorism from Abraham Hicks, the one that's called "I Am a Deliberate Creator," and it has some soothing music and some positive affirmations. And if you take a moment each day to just sit and reflect, it will give you energy for the rest of the day. And so go to the facebook.com/Debbie Brook, no .com, it's facebook.com/Debbie Brook, and you will find the link right there. I've also put up something very lighthearted, fun, and funny. You know, we learn so much from animation, from cartoons, and theater. The creators have a way of making life fun to look at, humorous. We can laugh at the things that we do and say that are not especially the best things in the world, how we treat others. This is a story from Pixar called For the Birds, and it has, of course, a lovely soundtrack of music and the peeping of, I think it sounds like zebra finches, but some people think it sounds like a little toy beeping. And just looking at the animation of the face, which are either stereotypic or exaggerated, and it really brings home how we treat others, what we think about others, how we make other people feel when you're in a group, and this is a group of birds, and they're looking at somebody who doesn't really fit in exactly into their way of life or how they look and into their family, and it a little bit like ostracizing that other bird, and yet the tables turn by the end of the little cartoon. So take a look at that. It's from Pixar. It's mighty cute. And then the other place that you can go is Homeopathy World Community. That is facebook.com, Homeopathy World Community, where I post whole bunches of aphorisms and educational bits of information that you can reflect on, you can comment on, you can ask deeper questions. What does this mean? We have so many people on the network there who can probably chime in and answer your question. One of the things that I have just recently posted is that an announcement. In 1983, the government agreed to make the AMA's codes the only ones allowed for medical billing, which means that alternative and integrative medical practitioners are completely squeezed out of the system. And that comes from, that's obviously something in the United States, that comes from the Alliance for Natural Health, which explains a lot for those who are looking for health care and would like to seek out alternatives, CAM, complementary and alternative medicine or integrative medicine. And for some reason, you know, they have to pay out of pocket. And they explain that due to this agreement with the AMA code, it's very difficult for other practitioners to be able to apply for medical insurance and get coverage because there are actually no codes that cover the kind and type of treatment that they provide for people. So that is what they have done. The ABC coding solution is one of the few billing code providers that offer codes for a full range of integrative practitioners and therapies, as well as nursing and other services. So if you go to this website, which is Alliance for Natural Health, and look up medical billing codes, will nurses and alternative medicine ever get a foot in the door? There's a whole article about this. And the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, granted an exception to test ABC codes in electronic healthcare transactions in the year 2003. Alaska Medicaid used ABC codes under this exception between the years 2004 to 2009 to process 2 million claims and payment transactions in a behavioral health program. It says Alaska documented a cost savings of over 50% in using these ABC codes rather than using the traditional and required AMA codes. HHS, which is the Health and Human Services, then asked the Centers for Medical and Medicaid Services to review the ABC's cost-benefit analysis, quantifying the savings. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid reported back that there was, quote, no compelling data to have ABC codes added to the standard codes required for filing health care claims, unquote. So you can see how they are totally putting blinders on and not paying attention to what could be a major savings in medical care for people of the United States of America. And so we really do not have total freedom in when we are, in a way, channeled and forced into a certain kind of care because that's what the government allows, that's what the government supports, and that's what the government covers. So the ABC decided to abandon working with the government after that. And they have already spent $700,000 on lobbying efforts. For now, the ABC Coding Solutions is working directly with practitioners. So they're getting out of the middleman, which would be the government, to use the ABC billing codes in filling electronic claims with private users. They said, quote, we found that nurses, counselors, chiropractors, and many other integrative health professionals are frequently not reimbursed by insurance companies. Without these ABC codes, these professions are often reimbursed at the wrong rate and their payments are delayed. This was explained by Melina Giannini, the CEO of the ABC Coding Solutions. So this is pretty interesting, and I wonder how far it will go and if this will start getting more traction in the news and people will learn about it. So check that out at Alliance for Natural Health about medical coding. Now I would like to talk a little bit, and I thank you for tuning in with me today, about another aphorism for this day. It's a daily thought, and it says, just a favor. The Baal Shem Tov taught that a soul may descend from its high place in the heavens down into this world for 70 to 80 years just to do a favor for another. And this really seemed to make me stop and pause, and maybe you will think about it. is your purpose in this world to do a favor for another person? Have you been given 70 to 80 years of life to fulfill, to go through that journey, your soul's journey, to fulfill that favor? And maybe could you have been given the mission through heaven to do two favors and live to be older than 70 to 80 years, although we know that commonly the lifespan of a person is between 70 to 80 years. So those people who live longer, are they doing more, or what else is happening in their life through their soul energy? And I thought, okay, we need to learn a little bit more about the Baal Shem Tov. His original name was the Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. And he really had quite a mysterious and unusual life. He was the founder of an important movement called Hasidus, that many legends have grown around him, and we really don't know all of the historical facts of his life. And even the date of his birth is not exact. They say it was the 1700s, or perhaps on that century mark, the 1700s. This man, Rabbi Yisrael, was born in the Ukraine on the Polish-Russian border. And as in the story we know from the Bible about Abraham and Sarah, who had a child, Isaac, when they were quite old, 99, his parents, the Baal Shem Tov's parents, Eliezer and Sarah, were also quite old when Yisrael was born, the Baal Shem Tov, and they passed away when he was a very, very young child. And we are told that the last words to his son, the father, to his son were, quote, "Fear nothing other than God." And he became an orphan then, whereupon the community took him under their wing to take care of him. And he had his way of wandering in the fields and the forest, surrounding himself with the forest energy, pouring his heart out to God. And he had a very strong relationship and tie to God. And this form of relationship is where they got the name Hasidus, as this connection. And that hopefully we all will be creating this connection to a power beyond us, mysterious, beyond the vital force, what we cannot really know only in this material world and through our prayers. So he had a long life, and when he had lots of trials and tribulations, losses in his life, and it says that when he was 36 years old in the year 1734, so maybe that's strange, because originally they say he was born in 1700, but if he was 36 in the year 1734, it means he was born right before the turn of the century. And it says that he revealed himself to the world, and he became known as the Baal Shem Tov, which means Master of the Good Name. And it was used for holy men who were known as miracle workers. So this is interesting, and that's probably where this comes from, this saying for today. The Baal Shem Tov taught that a soul may descend from its high place in the heavens down into this world for 70 to 80 years just to do a favor for another. And you know what? It reminds me that those people who feel depressed and can't get out of their own mental circular thinking and sadness, that getting out and doing a favor for somebody else is going to make a big difference. Hello, Kavitha, welcome. You are welcome to call in. You are welcome to chat. It is just me today. Dr. Adol is celebrating the holiday Diwali with his families, as I hope many people are, forgetting about work and just enjoying life and friendship and giving lots of hugs. Hi, Kavitha. You can call in and talk to me if you wish using your Skype, the little blue button at the top of the page, or you can call in using 347-945-6956. I'm talking about just whatever comes into my mind today. Today, I'm calling this session just chatting, schmoozing with Debbie. Just whatever we want to talk about, we can. Whatever comes across our desk, whatever inspiration and motivation has reached you today, let's get out there and motivate other people. On Twitter, I heard, or I retweeted, rather, a couple of things that other people have sent, and I really love to retweet and say and help people out, let them know how much I appreciate them. And so what did I come across? I came across not only the Antibiotic Awareness Week, but Coach Harmon said, if your only goal is to become rich, you will never achieve it, said by John D. Rockefeller. Well, I hope that he had beneficial philanthropic thoughts in mind, and he did become rich. And so I know that many people say negative things about him, but I'm sure that he must have done some good in his life. It is said that if you have been given a lot of money, if you have become materially wealthy, that is quite a temptation. It's quite a challenge to you, but it also means that the Creator God has given you the ability to help many people and to give and to be a benefactor to others. And we must be grateful and thankful for that gift that we have. And what else did I came across? New Frontier Girl said, there is only one unpardonable sin, deliberate cruelty. All else can be forgiven. This was a quote from Truman Capote. And so we can see that if somebody intentionally harms another human being, that is somewhat like a form of murder, is it not? It is a form of harm, and then it would require some kind of trial, some kind of court, going into a court system and finding out the truth of that person. But if Truman Capote says that this is really intentional and deliberate, how can we forgive? I think that we can never forget, but in order to clear our own heart and soul, we must find ways to forgive others. And there was another one that was very prominent on Twitter, and this one is, again, from New Frontier Girl. She says, from Mother Teresa, what can you do to promote world peace? Go home and love your family. That is Mother Teresa. So all the love starts from home. And therefore, you can start with yourself. You are the center of the world. And as the center of the world, you can reach out with your hand and touch someone else. So I don't know whether anybody's still listening, but you're welcome to chime in, to call in, to chat, and to send us your thoughts. Here's another one, and we've got a whole bunch on Facebook, a lot of conversations. The famous one by Hippocrates, let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food. Dr. Mashkour Ahmed says, eat your food as your medicine. Otherwise, you will have to take medicine as your food. Remember that the foods we eat can be well chosen to provide sustenance and nutrition, or they can challenge and weaken the body. One of the things Hahnemann says is that when a person is disordered, has a malady, that we must listen to the cravings that they desire, because it might give us a hint as to, not only will it comfort them, it might give us a hint as to what homeopathic remedy would be the necessary ones for healing them and bringing them toward cure. So those are some of the general thoughts today. And if you want to have a bunch of fun, there's one more. It's a green piece of paper with a paragraph or two. All the letters are mixed up, and in all of the words, not all, but majority of the words in the paragraph, and it looks like gibberish if you take a close look. But if you take a quicker look and you have a sharp brain, you're going to be able to figure out what it says. And so basically the mind is constantly looking for patterns and gestalt, for closure. The mind sees from what it knows from past experience and can only or more easily recognize that which is it already knows. So how do you recognize somebody's face? How do you recognize them by what they're wearing or their hairdo or the colors that they choose to be their signature color? What if there were a word that used the same letters but were formed in the actual pattern as written? Plus, the mind also uses and puts the letters, words, and phrases into a context. And we know that if you have met the person who checks you out at the grocery store and then you see them not behind the counter, do you recognize who they are? Do they look familiar, but they're in a different place? So context makes all the difference for recognition. Yes, some people think that you can simply just write with spelling errors all the time, and that's okay. I kind of personally disagree. I like to see order. I like to see formality. I like to see things in its place. So kind of I think that the mind doesn't really ignore spelling mistakes. The mind, I think, skips and trips on them in normal, everyday-to-day reading. And the mind, though, has a way to repair mistakes, to help us understand and make meaning out of the illogic that we see. And doesn't the body do this too, constantly, 24/7, every moment? The body is constantly healing us and getting us back into balance. And I know that I have a quote coming up soon that's going to emphasize this point. And so we're going to continue here learning together. I encourage you to get onto the Facebook.com Homeopathy World Community and read some of those little posters that I put up. One of them is, lastly, at the close of acute illness, when miasmatic symptoms express themselves, the homeopathic physician has a unique opportunity to learn of the indicated remedy. And partially that is because the body is trying to clear itself from some disturbance during an acute illness, and it is during an acute illness that the body has the potential, the vital force has the potential to actually clear the disorder and the disease on its own without outside help. And at that point, through the clearing, these symptoms become very distinct and clear. And from the remaining symptoms after you get over an acute illness, you can then retake the case and find maybe what we would call a constitutional remedy. And, you know, as I was just talking about how the mind works and looking for patterns in Gestalt and what do we believe and what do we not believe, I had also posted up this incredible monumental photograph of the Statue of Liberty with the picture of Hurricane Sandy in the background hovering ominously behind it with some sun and looks like sun and moon in the background. What a composite photoshopped image that looks quite surreal. It's very large in our mind, and the fact that somebody put it together and it went viral on the internet is amazing, that we say this is the picture in our minds of the Frankenstorm that hit the East Coast, that it was so, so powerful. And yet, these types of photoshopped, manipulated, and faked images make a great statement to us, and how we reflect and respond to them is interesting. And so now we're going to... Somebody also put up World Diabetes Day, November 14th. That's today. And we'll have to have a special show all about diabetes coming up in the future. It's interesting that these things pop up on our windows just synchronously at the appropriate time. And a little clinical tip here is Hydrastis. Hydrastis, as referenced by Dr. A.U. Ramakrishnan, for cancer of the stomach, pancreas, and upper intestinal tract, the glands, lungs, and esophagus, having characteristically yellow, thick, ropey secretions, a distended abdomen, profuse perspiration, extreme weakness, and intense pain. So we know of no medicine which has caused so great an improvement in the general health of our cancer patients as Hydrastis canandaensis, an improvement which in most cases has become visible in the bettered expression of the countenance of the patients. And this is a quote on the clinical tips from Drs. Marston and McLimit. So keep that in mind, and when there is this type of yellow, ropey, thick, stringy discharge from the orifices and extreme weakness with intense pain, Hydrastis is going to be helpful. And I'm sure that we need to learn about the potency, or whether you're taking it as a mother tincture or a cell salt. Okay. I'm going to take a look here to see if anybody is logged into Skype. It's asking to pay. Huh. Okay. So, Kavitha, you basically just have to call into 1-347-945-6956. I don't think, if you're living in the United States and you click that Skype button, you should be able to call in without a problem. Maybe I can call you if you're still there. So I will check your phone number and see if I can give you a call. If you answer, then we'll know that's okay. If you're still there, I will check that out, okay? So hang on. Hang on while I try and call you. And otherwise, anybody else who's tuning in, I welcome your conversation in the chat or calling in. So let's see what happens. It's ringing. Kavitha, if you are home and not busy with clients, if you're not doing your regular routine work. Hello.
Hi, Debbie.
Are you in the middle of work?
Yeah, but that is when you are more important.
Oh, no. I don't want to disturb you. If you're in the middle of work, anytime you want to leave, basically, I am able to call to people. And this way, it's easier for some people. Are you at your clinic now?
Yes. But okay. I'm fine, baby. Let me... I have... oh, my God. Let me unmute or something because I could hear the...
Yes, you... Okay, this is something that people on the internet and the radio have to learn, basically, to turn off the browser sound. Yeah. Okay,
yes, that... I can hear you very much better.
Right. So I've kind of been talking about all sorts of things that have come across my desk today to share. And one other thing is that people are talking about this agave nectar because people want to have something sweet. And, of course, they don't want to have processed white sugar. And then there's brown sugar, maybe a little bit better. And there is molasses. And unsulfured molasses actually... something good for you. It can help with many things. It provides iron and for people who are anemic. And I've also read that it is very good for constipation. So a little bit of molasses might not be a bad thing. And then lastly, they've got this agave nectar, and people have been talking about it, and that it's always been... You think about it as something good, but there are negative aspects to it. I don't know if you've been reading about it. And there's also stevia and xylitol as other kinds of sweeteners. Is there anything that you particularly use?
Yes, Debbie. I usually use the brown sugar, but I hardly use it. So a small quantity. And I heard about stevia also. From other friends, and they are finding it very good, and they are able to enjoy what the sweetness they wanted to get it, and it is also helping them in the sense like they are doing good. That's it. It's not going to help them with any of their disease conditions, but they are enjoying that. And when you said Debbie anemic, I would say like the simple thing which we use like grandparents or people, what they do is like peanuts, jaggery or same seeds, they make some snack out of that, and it is very good for anemic conditions. So instead of sugar, they use the jaggery so that it is good compared to that white sugar.
Okay, so what is that? That's coming from India. I'm not sure what that is called. How you spell?
Yeah. Usually it's an Indian snack. So just they grind it and make it into kind of a powder or something, and they make it into a ball or some square shape, and so the jaggery gets nicely, like molasses when you said, like it gets heated, and so that it gets very well mixed with these ingredients, and it can be used like a snack, like a sweet snack. And it is good for anemic, so it builds up the iron levels.
I see. So... you know, some people have a jaggery. Okay, J-A-G-G-E-R-Y.
Yes.
Okay. And so this is not something commonly in the United States that most people know about. We do want to keep our sugar intake down, but sometimes we have a craving. Maybe some people like to have some sugar in their tea or have a little sweet something. And, you know, we do have to live with some pleasure on this earth. You want to know what I just made? This is so exciting. I had a huge cantaloupe melon.
Mm-hmm.
I had it in the refrigerator, and for some reason my fridge was getting too cold and it froze the melon. Now, if you look at the frozen melon, it's not going to be too appealing as something you want to eat as pieces cut up. It's not going to have the same texture. So I took the entire thing, except for the peel, I took the entire thing and I put it into a juicer machine, and it is the most delicious sweet drink, just melon, melon juice.
That sounds great. Really, it sounds good because no one does like, oh, what to do with that frozen cantaloupe is a question, right? That's a good idea, Debbie.
Right. I guess you have to have a juicer to do it. And then I really had fun with it when I did this yesterday. And I put the entire jar of the melon juice into the refrigerator, and it kept perfectly well. It's really very refreshing if you're on a juice diet or something. The other thing that's listed is maple syrup. Maple syrup is really something good from the tree, and that's okay. So,
basically, Debbie, rather than glucose, fructose is a little bit better and much better. Like, say, for example, diabetic people, they have the craving for sugar. And instead of glucose or sucrose, they can try things which have fructose. So honey and, I don't know, sugar cane, if you have heard it or not.
Sugar cane, the whole life plant.
Yeah, it is where it comes like sticks, and when you squeeze it or something with the machine or something, the juice will come out. So it is a very famous drink in India. So basically, those kind of things, they use it.
That's a famous drink in India. What is it, from sugarcane?
Yeah, sugarcane juice. We love it.
I have never had that. I would imagine, though, if you were sitting there chewing on the sugar cane, wouldn't this be detrimental to your teeth?
No, Debbie. See, people who do not eat much sugar, they also have the cavities. We have seen a couple of them. So, of course, eating too much will also lead to the cavities, but it is not the only reason that lead to the cavities. But just not only sugar, but you supplement with other things. So little quantity is best, but some constitutions crave sugar. So that's the only difference.
Ardent night comes to my mind.
Oh, yeah. And Lycopodium, too, loves sweets.
Yeah. Yeah, we do love it. Okay, so I think I would like to do some, let me see if there's anything else that I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk just a little bit about when people are getting congested now, that they use the neti pot for nasal irrigation. And we have a great concern about molds and superbugs and things getting out of control. So even though neti pots are wonderful, they are great to irrigate and flush the germs from the nasal passages, but there have been, and people use it basically as a daily ritual in some places of the world, but there's a problem if you don't keep it really, really clean, or if water is contaminated. So we just want to make a note of that, because there has been an incidence of infection in the past years from amoeba, like amoeba dysentery, from the use of the neti pot when it is not completely clean or the hands are not washed properly. So this is just something that we need to be aware. And I do have an article all about that. Are you also looking on the home, the Blog Talk Radio page, to see any posts there?
Yes, baby. I could see your link, right? Native pots. Okay.
Okay, so yeah. I did that, and so I, people can look that up on Homeopathy World Community. Just look up neti pot. And now I think that it's time to move on and talk about the principles and art of cure by homeopathy. I have been slowly reading this book, and I find reading out loud is very helpful and enlightening. I think it helps us to understand and think through the words when we speak out loud. And it's also helpful to the listeners that, you know, people love to get books online, books, audiobooks. And elderly people love audiobooks because obviously they might be having a problem with their vision and they can't read so well, or it's tiring, or people like to listen to audiobooks while they're doing commute to work or to school or driving around. It's a way to keep learning in all time. So do you have this link to the reading for today, Vital Energy in its Universal Application?
I'm checking the. I'll check it, Debbie. I'm clicking the link.
It's Chapter 5 by Dr. Herbert A. And I absolutely adore the way he presents information chapter by chapter in an organized way and helps refresh in my mind the meaning and the learning of healing, of disease, of practicing medicine, of always coming back to vital energy, and how spiritual and soulful homeopathic medicine practice is. So I'm going to go ahead and read. It says, vital energy in its universal application. The vital energy is that force which animates each individual. While the vital energy is in the individual, that individual is said to have life, to be, to exist. And you know what? I think that I have already read this chapter in previous talks, but it's always good to refresh. Even as the individual is derived from, becomes from the mating of two individuals, the cell mating which this vital force may be handed on with physical characteristics of the parents, so is the vital force itself derived from an infinite source, a storehouse of dynamic power, capable of developing and reproducing to an infinite degree in its manifestations, yet each individual partaking in greater or less degree of general vital characteristics common to all. So here we have, he is telling us that each of us is unique. We are one and only as a human energy on the planet. And I recently posted, we are like a snowflake. Each of us is unique. We come through the immaterial into the material world through our parents with their characteristics, which we would call our DNA today, our heredity, and including our miasms homeopathically. And yet, here we are, we in our body, we are finite, but in our existence, what he said at the beginning, life to be, to exist, that is infinite. Our soul energy is infinite. And this is the miracle of life, that something that is has no end, will be, will ever be, and will always be, is inside of us. How can we, as a vessel, capture something so immaterial, that how can something material hold something that is immaterial within it? This is incredible. So I love to read Dr. Roberts.
Yes, Debbie. And he clearly mentioned that the vital force or the vital energy is the thing which animates the living organism, like the dead and the living person, the what makes the difference and how a living person can be in a healthy state or the diseased state, how all these manifestations or the what comes up is just because of that vital force. And that, like our spiritual growth and everything, like, so it clearly shows that the essential nature of that for a human being.
Yes, and yet last week's talk in the previous chapter, everything on the planet is material, has a life. So the earth's crust, the mantle, the rivers, the oceans, everything is dynamic and moving. Everything is has a life force. Our life force is a little bit different from the life force of those things in the way it manifests in the material world. So we are capable, and this is what homeopaths do, we are capable of extracting from what appears to be inanimate, the rocks and the limestone and other things in the world, or from plants or other animals, we extract the essence, some of that animated force into us when we use it homeopathically as a medicine to help us to heal and to remove an illness or a disorder. Okay, let's go to the next paragraph. The vital force in the individual becomes therefore the ego, that most intimate spark of the individual, which is in itself the essence of the individual, and which divides his individuality from all others, yet is his closest relationship to the universe. This closely relates him to all living creatures, yet he is identical with none. It is at once his tie to all energy, all vitality, all life, and at the same time his insulation against the massed power of the world. So he says, once you get the vital force implanted into the individual, you are born, you exist, then there is an I, the ever-present ego, the I, which differentiates you from everyone else on the planet, even though we all come from the same source. Probably religion was the first expression of thought to formulate this vital concept of life. Many religions, through many ages, have expressed the thought we find in the Bible, quote, "And the Lord God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul," unquote. Quote, "Before Abraham was, I am," unquote. Religion accepts the concepts of infinite life on the spiritual plane, but has not attempted to apply it to all planes of existence. Science accepts it in part, one is tempted to say in fragments, but science has never correlated the whole, even on the material or intellectual planes. And this is our challenge, especially today, with people who are skeptics of a creator, of who feel that their own intellect is the only thing that they have, that there isn't something beyond them that enlightens them, that it's everything that they have is due to their own will and power. And this, in a way, lowers them on the earth plane. It does not bring them higher to grow and expand and spiral upward, is what we talked about in the previous chapter, this development process. And so a lot of people know that the words I am and everything that you say after it is so important. Do you have thoughts on this?
No, we have conveyed it. That's all I have, Debbie.
Okay. Just chime in if you have anything to add. Of course, we know the breath is where we begin. The first breath is life, and the last breath is the end of our material life. So without clean air, we are not in a good shape on the planet. And so this is something we must clean up. Now we're going to go, and so he also talks about science has never correlated the whole. And this is the block of science today, science as a religion, as opposed to science as a tool to understand our world better and to know that science can be used both for good and for evil purposes, and what we learn from science. And even Einstein was a very religious man, one of the greatest scientists and mathematicians on the planet ever to live. Astronomy, says Dr. Roberts, is a part of science. Mathematics is an essential component of astronomy. Astronomy and mathematics, viewed in the light of the whole vision of vital energy, are essentially a partial proof of the omnipresence of vital energy as being the moving energy, the activating power of the universe. And sometimes we think that we can bring all of life down into its essential parts of on and off. You're in computer technology, you know, everything is black and white or on and off, or what are the words that you use for that switch that we have, that negative and the sign, negative and positive, but there's, you know, the button on the computer that we use. Everything can come down to its component part of a digit. 0 and 1, is that it? 0 and 1? On and off?
On and off, I'm thinking, Debbie.
Okay, so he brings astronomy, looking up at the stars and the planets and our world, mathematics. Mathematics is a basic form of language, just as music is a basic form of language, that we can help to understand our world around us. Dr. Roberts says, as logic deals with, quote, the principles governing the comparative and constructive faculties in the pursuit and use of truth, unquote, let us apply this science to our theorem and reason this through to its natural conclusions. So homeopathy is very scientific. It has basic underlying pinning principles that keeps us grounded and tells us if we are flying in the face, we're going in the wrong direction. We have these principles. Last chapter, he said the basic principles of vital force moving and developing from inward, from within outward, and then Herrick's laws of knowing if you have given the correct remedy based on observation of whether the symptoms are moving and disappearing from the present to the past, historically backward in time, from the vital organs, protecting those vital organs to the outward part of the body, and from upward down.
Right, Debbie. And he, in simple words, he clearly mentioned that, see, the truth, whatever is happening in the nature, that it is a science. And he said science to our theorem and reasoning behind that science and the natural conclusion. So that is what is the homeopathic principle, which is really has a solid scientific basis. Like if one tries to understand what it is and how the things are going on and what is that really scientific and how the healing is occurring.
Thank you. And I know that you have to get back to work. You've taken your precious time to come in and talk with me. It's about 12:30 Eastern time. And
thank you so much, Debbie. And I like the link which you have sent to me for the Diwali. It is really wonderful, the prayer. So thank you once again, and I'll talk to you again. Bye-bye.
So we've just been talking to Kavitha Kukunoor, the author of a beautiful book, Beyond the Limits, and you can check that out on Homeopathy World Community. We have a link to her page and to her motivational thoughts. So thank you so much, and we'll see you soon. Okay, so I'm going to continue with the reading of the principles and the Art of Cure by Homeopathy, Dr. Herbert Roberts. And he says, without the vital force, there can be... Okay, we were talking about logic deals with the principles governing the comparative and constructive faculties in the pursuit and use of truth. Let us apply this science to our theorem and reason this through to its natural conclusion. We are always seeking truth. A true scientist is seeking truth. A philosopher is seeking truth. A physician is seeking truth. And we need to apply this and take this into our heart, mind, and soul, that when we see something that is not truthful, what do? We must question it. Dr. Roberts says, without this vital force, there can be no life, no development, since there is no static condition in nature. And he repeats, he says, no static condition in nature. Everything is dynamic. Without a healthy, normal development of the vital force, we find a state of decay and death. So it spirals downward. As homeopathic philosophers, we do not concern ourselves at this time with the sociological aspects of this problem, although inferences from the foregoing statements may seem obvious. It is our duty to consider these primarily as they relate to the physical, mental, and spiritual well-being of our patients. So sociology, what is our social climate? What is happening in our community, our places of worship, our places of study, our libraries, our community centers, our schools, our government? This is sociology. What is happening? Are we moving toward cure? Are we moving toward truth? Are we cleaning out things that are decay and toward death? As homeopathic philosophers, that's what we were just reading, and we have observed in the study of the human race that life is perpetuated under certain favorable conditions of mating. It is true that physical characteristics are handed on from parents to offspring, but that the parents actually give life to the child, we may reasonably doubt. Yes, interesting, isn't it? We may say with all assurance that under favorable circumstances, life is handed on from the parents to the child in more or less perfect vigor. Whence life comes, we cannot say, but that it gives vigor in greater or less degree to the individual according to the heredity and the environment, we cannot doubt. Thus, Dr. Herbert says, life is a miracle. We cannot say. It is a mystery. We doubt. It is not the parents who are giving life, although we attribute and thank our parents every day of our lives for birthing us into this world, into this material earth and universe, yet we do not really know what is beyond. Dr. Herbert says that life is continuous, we know to be true. There has been no age when all life has ceased. And we find this vital force, this energy, this dynamis, passed on in all forms and degrees of living creatures. History shows us that life has thus been manifest for so many centuries that we come to, by deductive reasoning, to comprehend that life is infinite. It is eternally going on and on. And I suppose if he was into astronomy today, he would learn about how many eons of information we are just receiving on this planet today, of worlds being born out in the celestial bodies, and that it does appear there is an essence of infinite energy, infinite dynamis, life force, and it is our soul which is infinite, ever moving dynamis that lives beyond our material world. It came from something, it goes to something, that is source. Where there is vital force, he says, there is action, motion. Action is one interpretation, one manifestation of vital force. We know that we can have thoughts, but until there is action, are we really living if we do not move, if we do not speak, if we do not interact? Do we really live? We speak of the inanimate as dead, yet with death there is always decay, he says. We think of the earth and other plants as dead, yet they are in continual motion according to their regular and defined direction through the universe, which has been observed and recorded by man. We may reason, therefore, that since these great bodies have regular motion and direction, they are impelled by some force, some energy, which, although it may not be what we have come to call vital energy, is in degree closely related to it. So maybe he's making a distinction here between what we say in homeopathy, our human vital energy, which enlivens us to exist, is a type of a force, but there is another type of a force toward the regular motion and movement and direction which appears so orderly, which is a God energy, that this energy is, we don't call it vital energy, it's the energy vital to the universe, to the earth's motion. But in homeopathic terms, maybe we don't call it vital energy that we attribute to enlivening our body. Quote, if this is continuing on, if therefore this force, this energy actuates or permeates all forms and degrees of life, from the most humble and inconspicuous to the very planets, we may reasonably assume that vital force is the most fundamental of all conditions of the universe, and that the laws governing the vital force in the individual are correlated with the laws which govern all vital force, all forms of energy, whatever or however expressed. And now that I think about it, at the beginning of his talk today, he explains that we are each unique, and that vital force, that energy, is coming from heaven, that vital force that makes us unique like a snowflake is similar to what I opened today's talk with from the Baal Shem Tov, that this heavenly soul comes to earth to perform some good deed to help someone else on the planet. If we have no motion, no action, no direction without vital energy, says Dr. Roberts, it must be this energy which is responsible for all growth and all development in all spheres of existence. Like all laws, the laws governing vital force may be infringed to some degree. The privilege granted to human life is the right of choice, and this right of choice implies degrees of choice. The planets, being set in their courses, have no right of choice. and move always according to law. Human beings, we know, to exercise the right of choice. And herein is our province as physicians, he's talking to doctors, for in making the choice, which is often a choice against natural laws, we find the vigor of the vital force abated and a retrograde action of the body, mind, or spirit sets in. As we have pointed out before, vital force in its perfection means growth and development, since there is no condition of standing still in nature. An infringement on natural laws means decay and death. The degree of the infringement, either in an individual or in his predecessors, determines the degree of decay and its speed. This is quite an amazing statement. It's almost telling to me, is it possible that we can live much, much longer than we do? Is there something that we're doing to actuate and speed decay and death by our choices? Is he telling us that if we take right choices for living, that we can continue to grow and develop to a ripe old age? Could we be 900 years old like Noah? Is that possible? What is our potential? What is our infinite potential if we were a moral, ethical world, if we made right choices, if we saw the good? And I'm waxing on that thought as we continue. He says the planets and all other objects that we see are guided by a force that they don't have a choice. They are just required to fulfill whatever the principles that govern those laws, whether it is gravity or some other physical principle. Since human beings as individuals have the right of choice, even in the face of the operation of the natural laws governing the vital energy. So again, I skipped over this, but he said that we can throw aside the natural laws that govern us and do something by choice. This is what we say is free will given to mankind. Does any other being on the planet have this capability of free will? Can they exercise a thought, an intention, and then into an action of doing something that is against a principle of survival, putting themselves in harm's way to save another person, doing something that defies logic, jumping out of an airplane at 28,000 feet high into space and skydiving, bombing down to the earth at the speed of sound. I mean, are these things that defy the natural law, things that mankind has a right to choose? They have also been given those circumstances and conditions surrounding them which tend toward, one, a correct choice, direction, and two, aids to correct the mistakes already made and to regain the normal balance. Both these conditions are found in three spheres, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual, says Roberts. On the spiritual place, we find those aids which tend toward correct choice and aids to regain a lost balance in the form of religious convictions and beliefs. All those aids which foster the growth and development of the spiritual life of man. On the mental plane, we find instruction of various kinds, which tends to development of the mental faculties and all those things which go toward an honest comprehension of the individual toward himself and his relationship to others and toward all life. In other words, those things which foster sanity. So if we want to be mentally stable, we're going to foster growth, development, and the spirit of man. We're going to try and keep balance. We're going to try and keep our convictions toward truth, justice, And what else? And he says that we honesty and our relationships to others and toward all life. These are the things that foster sanity. On the physical plane, we find those things which tend to keep us healthy in the body, such as suitable foods and those things which we can adapt for better housing, cleanliness, sanitation, and many other things. I mean, these are basic needs. Maslow stated our basic needs. We need to have food, clean water. We need to have a shelter. We need to have companionship and love. These are basic needs. Even people who have been polled as to their employment status, they would forego getting a higher rate of pay, a higher salary, toward feeling that they are listened to and respected and have dignity in their position as an employee. So you can see that what is the most high of our needs. We find on this plane, too, many substances closely allied to foods which have within them a vital energy capable of being raised by potentization from the purely physical plane to that of the mental or even spiritual. This is most decidedly the study of the homeopathic physician, for in these substances we find the most similar remedies for the conditions of the ills of man. And so as he speaks, Dr. Kant is teaching potential and presently practicing physicians how to practice medicine better. And this is it. Using the potential of what God has given us on the planet, in the universe, these energies, which are dynamic, and potentizing them to extract the enlivening energy in them if it matches the need of the human being who has some kind of a disorder. He said previously, an acute disorder, each of us can if we have the potential in our vital force to overcome a disease or a challenge or obstacle in our life from this acuteness, we have the potential to do that. But if we become weakened and we have a chronic ongoing condition, then we need an outside source to pull us up, to push us out, to move us into a balanced state. These substances, says Kant, themselves are derived from three kingdoms, mineral, vegetable, and animal. We cannot definitely say that the mineral substances in themselves possess vital energy, but they are fragments of that which composes the planet Earth, and the planet either possesses some form of vital energy in itself or is susceptible to being activated by vital energy to such an extent that it performs its appointed movements according to the law. And we can use these minerals by proper preparation in the form of vital energy, not to perpetuate life, but to influence it on all three planes of body, mind, and spirit, that the vital energy of the individual may be thereby guarded against decay and death. So using the vital energies of these kingdom objects from the kingdoms, mineral, vegetable, and animal, we extract and use their energy to supplement our energy in such a way that it is going to influence through the spiritual energy, the body, mind, and spirit, when it is needed, of the vital energy of the individual to guard against decay and death. So always spiraling upward, moving to development and growth, rather than in the opposite direction. So these are two directions of energy. And it's either this existence or the decay. And we can see that in the epidemic disease forces that come into our communities, that come into the different continents on the planet, that if you follow the energy of an epidemic disease, it waxes and wanes. It comes and goes in a rhythm that is part of some type of principle, law, force that governs it. And that is why we need to utilize these energies and understand these energies and work in sync with these energies of disease that comes into the planet at particular times of year, seasons, or decades, or centuries. Going on, Dr. Kent says, we recognize the presence of vital energy in vegetable growth, for it is evidenced in growth and movement in the plant according to the natural law of development, from within outward. The plant develops from the seed according to the physical characteristics of the parents, and again, under favorable circumstances, passes on this spark of vital energy in its own fertility. So we are the vessel by which the infinite source of energy and vital force comes onto the planet, into the body. Not only do we know that vegetable growth has its manifestations of vital energy, but it has been observed that the mysterious vital force beyond our comprehension, which controls by law the planets in their courses and influences the winds and the tides, influences the manner and periods of growth of the individual plant, thus again tying what we know to be a manifestation of life to the universal energy. So he says, take a look at the plants that are around you. What's growing in your neighborhood? What's growing around you that you might utilize this energy? The vegetable kingdom has probably served man in disease conditions longer than either the animal or the mineral kingdom. In the homeopathic method of preparing drugs for medication, by releasing the energy therein through potentization, we have found that from the source again, which we regard as material, we can influence disorder on the three planes of body, mind, and spirit. So we know ancient cultures have always used plants. They recognize the power of the plants around them to heal as well as herbs, that they take the plants and they have methods of crushing and making compresses and tinctures and other things that synergistically work in a way that can assist the body to heal. Included in that is the homeopathic method of potentization. And that, he says, is a very high plane of energy relating to matter. We comprehend most easily the animation, he says, the presence of vital energy in the animal kingdom. The medicine has long sought cure through the medium of substances derived from this source. That these substances have a tremendous power, we know to be true. Homeopathy, however, in distinction from ordinary medicine, believes that there too the release of power from the minimum of substance through potentization is that which will most quickly and accurately influence the disordered vital force of man on all three planes. He says this is going to be the most powerful way of medication through potentization. And I just have in my mind how, and we think about the atoms and fusion and fission of the atoms and exploding energy and the amount of energy that comes forth from these kinds of forces of the minute, imperceptible atoms and parts of atoms. And we go even beyond that when we talk about homeopathy, that we go into not just the physical plane, but the spiritual plane, the vital force, the enlivening force of mankind, which is quite awesome to think about. And that as homeopaths, as physicians, you have knowledge and power to utilize this as a resource to help mankind on its way toward development and growth. That is really an awesome thought. Dr. Kent, thank you. Dr. Roberts, thank you. We believe that vital energy, as we comprehend it, is not a mass power, but an infinite number of egocentric sparks. We believe also that material substance, mass power in medication, would completely overwhelm the individual vital energy to complete annihilation, or would subvert it to eventual decay and death. Here he's telling us that a crude material world power can cause decay and death. It can overwhelm the vital force. The vital force, is it so fragile that it can be overcome by the forces of drugs, of medicaments that suppress or repress or dominate the spirit? Let us find out what he says. We believe that the mathematical law of quantity extends through all nature and applies to all vital energy in whatever form, and that if this is so, it is peculiarly applicable when we are dealing with that infinitely delicate balance of vital force in the individual. You know, I think about the vital force myself as being a very powerful entity that daily, 24/7, every minute, every moment of every day, it is constantly balancing and cleaning and eliminating and enlivening. And how can this vital force be so delicate as to be crushed and decay? Well, if you think about the fact that a bad word, a harmful thought, can change our vital force, in a way, it is a very sensitive, I want to call it animation of ourselves. So it is a delicate balance. It can be called fragile, and yet it is in the same way very powerful and very resourceful. Let us look at this law of mathematics. With that thought in mind, the quantity of action necessary to effect any change in nature is the least possible. And as Fink adds, the decisive amount is always a minimum and infinitesimal. An infinitesimal. Can you believe that? If vital energy is the fundamental power, the motivating factor of the universe, balance must be one expression of the law. If the very planets are kept in their place through the influence of vital energy, this must be an infinitely delicate balance. We see the effects of balance all through nature and natural expressions, and therefore we realize that balance power is one manifestation of the law. And if you think about it, if you want to take a rocket ship and put it into space and direct it toward a target, if you take from the Earth the trajectory and tweak it the smallest, most infinitesimal amount, by the time it reaches the target, whether it's the sun, the moon, or whatever, or a planet out into space, the trajectory has moved so far that it's going to miss the target. It's not going to reach the planned landing place. So the balance is very infinitesimal. Going on with Dr. Roberts, he says, since the earth upon which we live is so delicately poised that it holds its regular position and movements without deviation, according to law, anything upon the earth which lives or is subject to the influence of vital energy must therefore in some degree be susceptible to balance. We recognize more susceptibility to the manifestations and interplay of vital energy and balance in the individuals of the human race than in any other form of existence. Since we so often see the effects of the imbalance of the individual. And today we see so much imbalance, the effects of populations being overwhelmed with crude drugs, with medications, from infancy, from the birth of the child being given vaccines, from drugs like Ritalin to calm a child who seems to be unable to keep still. there are so many things that are going on in our world today. We are faced in front of our noses. We cannot help but see something is out of balance. The rate of obesity, the rate of diabetes, the rate of heart disease, the rate of all of these illnesses, what is the cause of it? How can we return to balance, return to harmony? What do we need to do as, if you are a physician, if you are a healthcare practitioner, what do you need to do to assist the mind, body, and spirit of an individual to get back into balance? Dr. Herbert Roberts says, this is doubtless due to the influence of his power of choice, which often influences his own dynamis and the dynamis of those with whom he comes in contact. In other words, his very existence. Since we so often see the effects of the imbalance of the individual, this is doubtless due to the influence of his power of choice, which we just said. In other words, which is often influences his dynamis and the dynamis of those with whom he comes in contact. In other words, his very existence is an expression of vital energy, but he is also exposed to the influence of the vital energy of others, and the interplay of vital energy and balance from many sources may imperil his own balance. The resultant lack of balance in his own vital energy is disorder. That manifests itself in a train of symptoms of disease. So getting into balance is, of course, in today's world, not an easy thing to do. We have assaults on us from all sides, from fearful thoughts, from dominating governments, from unhealthy relationships, from recurring thoughts, from scary dreams, from natural disasters that put us into a state of imbalance, from drugs, from all sorts of things that are out there. We are incredibly strong that we are able to keep growing and living as we do. And therefore, you have to reach deep inside of you to find that strength and make right choices. He says it's up to us to choose. To choose to say no when it's not appropriate. To choose to say yes when an opportunity arises that will be helpful to you. Dr. Roberts says that mathematics is the science which treats of the measuring of quantities and the ascertainment of their properties and relations. This is an exact science. It is a part of the study of astronomy, among other natural studies. It must be applicable in all spheres where any concept of measurement or relationship exists. Gee, I wonder if he was an astronomer. I wonder if he was into astrology, into using the planets as a guide. I assume that he was in awe of space, of what he saw as the natural change in the seasons, in the planetary alignments that he saw in his day. Balance, he says, is the state of perfect relationship, the result of perfect computation, and the desired goal of all mathematics. We might say that mathematics in its highest form is the perception of balance in its highest degree. Thus, we realize that the laws that apply to mathematics must be equally applicable to every condition where balance is a factor. And you know, when you were a student in school, you always had to balance the equation. That was one of the exercises that you had to do. And when you were able to solve that puzzle, to find the solution to the algebraic equation, it probably sent a thrill through you. You probably felt good about yourself and a feeling of accomplishment, a feeling of knowing, of knowledge, of being able to choose and compute. And sometimes there's more than one way to solve that problem. So for each of us, there might be more than one way to solve our imbalances. Dr. Robert says, lack of balance in the individual may be engendered by the interplay of forces resulting from his privilege of choice. From the interplay of forces engendered by others and over which he has little or no control. So basically, you cannot control another human being, and you can only control and do for yourself. Or by the release power of an infinitesimal amount of almost any substance, animal, vegetable, or mineral, which has in itself the susceptibility of permeation or activation of the vital energy. Here we see the applicability of the mathematical law. The quantity of action, the actual quantity of substance susceptible to action, necessary to effect any change in nature, necessary to affect the balance of any living thing or the relationship between any living thing and circumstance, is the least possible. The decisive amount is always a minimum, an infinitesimal. So just think about that. Think about the fact that your thought might be that infinitesimal amount of energy and force required to move you to a better place. If you make a choice in your mind and stick to that choice, then you might be moving in a positive direction and not toward decay and death, but toward growth and life. And it says in the Bible, choose life. Here he says it in a mathematical format. All the elements and all forms of matter are capable of being moved, activated by vital energy, although they may not themselves possess this energy within themselves. Let me repeat that. All the elements and all forms of matter are capable of being moved, activated by vital energy, although they may not themselves possess this energy within themselves. All the elements and all forms of matter possess the possibility of divisibility to an almost infinite degree. So this is kind of like physics. You know that puzzle that you had as a kid in school that said, you're standing in front of the doorway and you can take a half of a step. Will you ever pass through the threshold of that doorway? Or will you continually, infinitely, constantly be taking a half of a step until you never pass through the doorway? This is really a mystery, isn't it? That we can walk through the doorway and we can pass through the threshold into the infinite, even though we are taking small baby steps toward growth and development. The greater the mass quantity of elements or matter, the more inert they become. So when matter gets heavy, it becomes inert. It's not as dynamic. You don't see the movement in the outside world as much, but it's retaining an incredible amount of energy. Thus, the massed iron becomes useful to man as iron or steel rails, bridges, utensils, or other material objects. Iron is a divided state and enters, when it is in a divided state, enters into the human physical body as a component part of that which is activated by the vital energy. And as a part of the physical body, the vital energy plays through it. Iron, even when amassed and inert, has the power of attracting vital energy in the form of electricity, but iron in mass formation is not capable of balance and direction within itself to the degree that is possible when its divisibility is greater. And think about that. We were just talking about sugar, about molasses, about getting energy into the anemic body, how iron is a necessity for life in the blood cells, as our hemoglobin needs ferrum, needs iron, and it is only through the divisibility of this mass particle that we can utilize it to breathe life into and animate our body. It is a question whether matter itself, which we call at times inert, so you think about that piece of iron as being inert, does not manifest active properties. But yet when we divide it, it does conduct energy, does it not? In other words, is possessed by activity and motion. This has been demonstrated in Madame Curie's investigations of radioactive substances, and again, the far-reaching discoveries of Langevin in his demonstration of the activity within the atom of the physical cell. And I think I've reported about that in a previous reading. The greater the divisibility of the elements or matter, the more they exhibit the possibility of permeability by the vital energy. The energy being not dependent upon the mass, but on the play or balance between the positive and negative poles of the atom. Here we think and see and feel magnetism. I repeat that. The greater the divisibility of elements or matter, the more they exhibit the possibility of permeability by the vital energy. The energy being not dependent upon the mass, but on the play or balance between the positive and negative poles of the atom. So here we see more about chemistry and physics and biology, that when we are able to break it down into component parts and utilize the negative and positive magnetic energy, the electricity within an object, within matter, we elicit and extract energy. Vital force is capable of three forms of action: motion, direction, balance. These manifestations of energy are an integral part of any exhibition of vital energy. Growth and development are directed motion, and in the degree of their perfection do we find the manifestation of balance. We have come to the end of this chapter, and he asks us to review. Dr. Herbert Roberts asks us, what do we mean by vital energy? Do you know? What is the influence of energy on growth and development? What is the effect of potentization on material substances? How is the energy inherent in plants released for their use in remedies? State the mathematical law of least action. How does the law of least action apply to the administration of homeopathic potentized remedies? What influence has divisibility upon matter? What three forms of action has vital force, motion, direction, and balance? The next chapter is chapter 6. I'm thinking that I might save that for another time and instead we've had really heavy talking, a heavy learning here. I would love to read something else that can bring us some healing energy, and that would be perhaps a reading from Robert Frost. I'm going to find something to read from Robert Frost, something maybe you haven't heard. And since we have been getting through floods, hurricanes, and storms, I will try this one. It's called A Line Storm Song by Robert Frost. The line storm clouds fly tattered and swift, The road is forlorn all day, where a myriad snowy quartz stones lift, and the hoof prints vanish away. The roadside flowers, too wet for the bee, expend their bloom in vain. Come over the hills and far with me, and be my love in the rain. The birds have less to say for themselves in the wood world's torn despair. Then now, these numberless years, the elves, although they are no less there. All song of the woods is crushed like some wild, easily shattered rose. Come, be my love in the wet woods. Come where the boughs rain when it blows. There is the gale to urge behind the brute our singing down, and the shallow waters aflutter with wind from which to gather your gown. What matter if we go clear to the west and come not through dry shod? For wilding brute brooch shall wet your breast the rain-fresh goldenrod. Oh, never this whelming east wind swells, but it seems like the sea's return to the ancient lands where it left the shells before the age of the fern. And it seems like the time when, after doubt, our love came back amain. Oh, come forth into the storm and rout and be my love in the rain. And that was by Robert Frost, who I think is so, so beautiful. How about one more from him? And I don't know all of them. They're not all familiar to me. This one is called For Once, Then Something by Robert Frost. Others taunt me with having knelt at well curbs, always wrong to the light, so never seeing deeper down in the well than where the water gives me back in the shining surface picture, me, myself, in the summer heaven godlike, looking out of a wreath of fern and cloud puffs. Once, when trying the chin against a well curb, I discerned, as I thought, beyond the picture, through the picture, a something white, uncertain, something more of the depths, and then I lost it. Water came to rebuke the too clear water. One drop fell from a fern, and lo, a ripple shook whatever it was lay there at the bottom, blurred it, blotted it out. What was that whiteness? Truth? A pebble of quartz? For once, then, something. He is an incredible author, an incredible poet of what he says. How about Acquainted with the Night by Robert Frost? I have been one acquainted with the night. I have walked out in rain and back in rain. I have outwalked the furthest city light. I have looked down the saddest city lane. I have passed by the watchman on his beat and dropped my eyes, unwilling to explain. I have stood still and stopped the sound of feet when far away an interrupted cry came over houses from another street, but not to call me back or say goodbye. And further still, at an unearthly height, one luminary clock against the sky proclaimed the time was neither wrong nor right. I have been one acquainted with the night. And a most beautiful words from Robert Frost called Mending Wall to finish this session. Mending Wall. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen to each, and some are lobes and some so nearly balls, we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd asked to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only and the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well. He says again, good fences make good neighbors. And you can meditate on that. If there is something that doesn't love a wall, why is it that good fences make good neighbors? Do we all need protection? Do we all need boundaries? Do we all need limits in order to enhance our infinite being? Do we all need to know when to say no, when to keep something that is unkind and harmful out? Do we need gates? When do we open the door? When do we take down the fence? As in taking down the Berlin Wall. When is it appropriate? I suppose there is a time and a place for everything. And that is going to be the end of today's schmoozing with Debbie, chatting away about whatever's on my mind. And I hope it was fun. I hope you enjoyed this. So let me tell you about next session is tomorrow, Thursday at noon, with Alan Phillips, attorney at law, expert and leader in the nation's exemption and waiver rights and freedoms, the power of choice to do what is right. Remember that all of these shows from Homeopathy World Community, whether on the Health Inn on Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time or on Blog Talk Radio, they are all educational programs. If you need some help, either legally or medically, you must see your healthcare practitioner. So I encourage you to do that. Now, on the Homeopathy World Community website, and I'll tell you also what's coming up next Monday on the Health Inn, we're going to have the Refusers, a popular musical band who is sending waves of awareness and messages about the harm that vaccinations may do to your loved ones. We're going to be talking to them on Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, USA, on the Health In Show. I will be putting a banner on the front page of Homeopathy World Community. On Thursday, Alan Phillips at 12 noon. And then next Wednesday, we will be back again with Dr. Otto, learning about heart health and homeopathy, reading Kent's repertory, and really learning so much from him. Don't forget, on the front page, you can click on the solution, homeoprophylaxis, the vaccine alternative, and use the HWC code. You can go to Miranda Castro's website and get the wonderful lip balm, Cell Salts, and she's going to be upcoming speaker on Health In, I think, December. We have the Health In videos all archived for your watching and listening pleasure. Mary Aspinwall has Homeopathy World kits and remedies. They are marvelous for all occasions. We have the Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy, which is the computer program that I personally adore and love to use every day for study, research, and putting in rubrics to find out about what remedy is appropriate in a specific case. So there are a number of different ways that you can obtain a license to Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy. Just go ahead and click the little button on Homeopathy World Community on the right-hand column. Kaviraj is the expert in agro-homeopathy and has a published and marvelous book, Homeopathy for Farm and Garden, Organic, Natural Plant and Soil Remedies. Don't forget that Dr. Deepak Sharma of New Delhi, India, of the Orbitz Clinic, and he also has a Homeopathy on Web. You go there and you will be able to contact him if you have a question and need some professional help. Dr. Christina Chambreau, veterinary doctor of medicine, is a marvel with taking care of your pets. And so I'm going to end today's show. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.